Kurt Vonnegut's Palm Sunday offers something rare in literary memoirs, brutal honesty wrapped in compassionate humor. This autobiographical collage reveals the man behind novels like Slaughterhouse-Five and Cat's Cradle, tracing his journey from privileged Indianapolis youth to prisoner of war to literary icon. The Great Depression shattered his family's comfortable existence, sending young Kurt from private to public schools and eventually to Cornell with strict instructions to avoid frivolous subjects. Yet it was at the Cornell Daily Sun newspaper, not his scientific studies, where he found salvation. "The Sun had been my saving grace, a family when I needed one," he reflects. Life continued dealing unexpected cards. Captured during World War II, Vonnegut witnessed the firebombing of Dresden as a POW, an experience that would haunt his writing forever. Upon returning home, he was shocked to find only a half-inch news item about Dresden, making him think it was just a minor detail in the war. This pattern of false starts and unexpected revelations became the blueprint for his life. Failed studies in chemistry, engineering, and anthropology ultimately led him to his true calling. "I've been subject to triage throughout my life," he writes, "sorted into the bottom third of every academic endeavor." But rather than resent this sorting, Vonnegut embraced it as part of finding his authentic voice. Vonnegut recognized he belonged to what may be America's last generation of full-time, lifetime novelists, writers shaped by the Great Depression and lined up by World War II. He benefited from a romantic era in publishing that financially supported young, clumsy writers while we developed our craft, when printed words remained the primary form of long-distance communication. This golden age allowed writers like Vonnegut, Norman Mailer, and Joseph Heller to develop their voices through multiple books sustained by advances and royalties that provided a living wage. Vonnegut's writing power came from his straightforward approach. Find subjects you genuinely care about. This authentic caring will be more compelling than language games. Like Shakespeare and Joyce, he favored simple language for profound subjects over vocabulary showmanship. His core rule was purpose. Every sentence must either reveal character or advance action. He saw writing as a trade, like carpentry, demanding both craft and utility. Writers must create meaningful confrontations while maintaining clarity, knowing that reading is a difficult art that most never truly master. This philosophy manifests in Harrison Bergeron, where a dystopian society enforces equality through handicaps on the gifted. Harrison's doomed rebellion against these constraints delivers a stark message about conformity. In Report on the Barnhouse Effect, a professor discovers a weapon-destroying mental power, but chooses exile over weaponization. From his New York townhouse, Vonnegut maintained his characteristic humility, even posting a self-made report card of his works, from A+, Cat's Cradle and Slaughterhouse-Five, to D, Happy Birthday Wanda June, reflecting his commitment to honest self-assessment. Behind Vonnegut's satirical wit lies a profound concern for human dignity. His stories explore tensions between individual identity and social expectations, between technological progress and human values, between chaos and our need for meaning. In The Kid Nobody Could Handle, band director George Helmholtz meets Jim Donini, a troubled teen in foster care. Finding Jim vandalizing the chemistry lab, Helmholtz offers his prized trumpet, claiming it was John Philip Sousa's, in exchange for Jim's boots. This unexpected kindness transforms the boy, culminating in Helmholtz's advice, "Love yourself and make your instrument sing about it." In DP, 6-year-old Karl Heinz, a mixed-race orphan in post-war Germany, sneaks out to meet black American soldiers, embracing a sergeant he calls Papa. When another orphan questions his story about meeting his father, Joe simply says, "Because he cried when he left me, and he promised to take me back home across the water." The story captures the essence of identity, belonging, and hope amid displacement. Throughout Palm Sunday, Vonnegut explores his intellectual heritage through his freethinker great-grandfather Clemens Vonnegut, who rejected religious doctrine in favor of truth, justice, knowledge, goodness, and rationality. Yet Vonnegut's view was nuanced. While questioning religious metaphysical claims, he valued religion's role in creating artificial extended families that combat loneliness. In his 1974 commencement address, Vonnegut declared loneliness, not heart disease, as the number one American killer. He championed extended families as the solution, citing how these networks sustained communities during the Nigerian Civil War by caring for their wounded, mentally ill, and refugees without government help. "I have seen the past, and it works," he proclaimed, lamenting modern society's abandonment of these vital social structures. Vonnegut's relationship with truth shifted after Hiroshima, despite his great-grandfather's belief in truth as the paramount requisite of human society. The bombings of Dresden and Hiroshima transformed technology, his family's religion, from practical tools into the means to planetary suicide. Mary O'Hare's confrontation about his Dresden book proved pivotal. "You were just children then. You're going to make war look good." This compelled Vonnegut to write honestly about what infants we really were, 17 to 21 years old, baby-faced prisoners who barely needed to shave. His University of Chicago mentor, Robert Redfield, offered another crucial insight. Artists create order from chaos by perfectly organizing their chosen medium. This philosophy of ordering 8.5 by 11-inch sheets became Vonnegut's life's work, a severely limited activity that has both sheltered me from storms and created them. Vonnegut saw the publishing industry becoming inhospitable to new writers, with television eliminating the short story market that once sustained authors between books. He predicted future novelists would emerge individually, often through inherited wealth, rather than in waves. When Slaughterhouse-Five was burned in North Dakota in 1973, Vonnegut responded to the school board, describing himself as a strong 51-year-old former farm worker, combat veteran with a Purple Heart, father of six successful children, and one of America's most widely read fiction writers. Though he mourned Dresden's destruction, Vonnegut acknowledged that family events affected him more deeply, noting ironically that he alone profited from the catastrophe. "I got $2 or $3 for every person killed. Some business I'm in." Kurt Vonnegut's voice, sardonic yet tender, disillusioned yet hopeful, continues to resonate decades after his death. His ability to address dark human experiences with humor and compassion offers a model for navigating our complex world. Whether discussing Dresden or technology's ethics, his blend of wit and wisdom reveals fundamental truths about humanity. His authenticity and straightforward style, marked by phrases like "so it goes" and simple asterisk drawings, reflects his belief that complexity doesn't require complicated expression. As he advised, trust your own voice, especially when it reflects your origins. Readers come to Vonnegut not for answers, but to contemplate what it means to be human in all its messy, contradictory glory. In that contemplation, they might find something like mercy, which he called the only good idea we have received so far.